We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found. Same hair from back, because I always look for amateur stuff. Well, not amateur, but I always look for real couples.
Fucking artisan, like artisan hipster porn.
No, I just don't like the sort of look you're talking about.
Yeah, we grew up in very different environments.
Yeah.
James?
Yeah?
Why does it have to have a penis involved?
God, because I like cocks. I like how they look. I like the aesthetic of a cock.
I know you do. I mean, that's a matter of record, isn't it?
Mm. I'm mostly heterosexual. I'm about 90% heterosexual, but I definitely like cocks.
But the porn
like
you
cocks.
Watch is very heterosexual, though,
oh,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Apart from the gay stuff, yeah.
Because heterosexual porn is very cock-centric.
But I don't mind. I don't mind watching
it's
a woman.
Weird.
I don't mind
really
watching
weird.
A woman peg a man.
See,
and I don't mind it when there's two men involved, and you know, maybe you know, a little bit. And a transvestite porn's always enjoyable.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. That's cool. That's okay. I feel like there might be... I find trans porn a little bit...
troubling?
It's confusing from the perspective... It's confusing from the same perspective that interracial porn is.
It's confusing from the perspective that I think I'm reviled by it, but my penis is very hard.
No, I'm conflicted about the fact that we take someone's actual life experience and turn it into our fetish. That's what I've got a problem with.
No, you misunderstood when I said reviled, that you were disgusted by them as an... I meant you feel disgusted by the fact that that person's being potentially exploited by your libido.
Yeah. I mean,
so
yeah.
Thanks for assuming that I was going for the bigoted angle there.
I assumed you were calling me a bigot.
No, I don't think you're a bigot.
I have my moments.
I think you're a fascist.
That's a fairer assumption. To be fair, that's a much fairer assumption. It's hot as balls in this studio.
Yeah. What are we? When are we? Have we started?
Of course.
I wouldn't. Have
all
said,
of this is going in.
Fucking hell.
James, when did you get back into porn?
Oh, do you know, I've been watching a little bit. Since I've been taking the metformin, my libido's taken a little... And I've been exercising. I think the exercise and taking medication for the diabetes, because apparently the diabetes makes you not very interested. So I've definitely found myself more sexually aroused more often than I have been for a while. So that's nice.
It's become weirdly academic for me.
Which one of you keeps it online and which one of you has it on your computer?
You just... it's all online.
Oh, I no longer have it on my computer.
Oh,
my,
okay.
Hard drive broke, so that fucked me over.
All right, so there's no sort of wiping the porn thing that still needs to happen.
But I like the British section of Pornhub. That's good.
The good thing about bend over videos,
oh no, there
is
rack.
That as well as the hairstyles, you can gauge when they were made by how old bend over looks in them, and he's got a cast of men he uses in all of the films.
Oh, he's
but they are hacky because they get completely different. Completely different and lovely women in all of them, but the things that the men do in them are always exactly the same.
The women aren't always lovely.
Sometimes
but
they're lovely.
The men
all people are lovely.
The men are always not.
Well, I mean, they've got their characters and you get used to them over time, but ultimately it doesn't matter. They have this lovely preamble where everyone's kind of normal and a little bit carry-on-y.
It's not lovely. No, and it is. It's cringingly carry-on, and then they fuck. It's like, if you're going to do carry-on, you can't fuck.
Yeah, you can.
It's like everyone hated Carry On Emmanuel because the innuendo was funny until he started showing the boobies and stuff and being fully exploitative. I like it when the exploitation only goes as far as going, "Phew, look at those. You don't get many of them to the pound, male gaze. Carry on male gazing." We should fucking write that.
These porno parodies of Carry On films you're talking about.
No, not
God,
at all.
That
James
would
is
be
just
too
James
meta.
Is just James is basically what bend over is like. is like...
Is this a person? Or,
yeah. Okay. You know, his real name isn't Ben Dover. You know Ben, James is going to let me
finish.
Is he British?
Yeah.
Is he the guy that's the dad of the guy?
Yeah, yeah. Tiger Honeydew. Yeah.
And he's really grotesque. He's like someone's dad.
He looks like Peter Stringfellow.
You're someone's dad?
No, I mean like someone's creepy
you're
dad.
You're someone's dad.
Yeah, I'm someone's dad.
But like... At a certain level, what appeals to me about James's reaction to Ben Dover is that a lot of Ben Dover's shtick is that he's kind of creepy but kind of knows he's creepy and he keeps saying rude things to women but then backing off from them and stuff like that. And it's basically like if James was emaciatingly thin and making porn with strange women all the time. It's really...
No, James would just apologise and then cry.
But that's...
I am not a fucking crier.
Bend over...
I apologise after I've come, over, but yeah, I never cry.
Before, I mean, just even going up to them.
Bend over's face isn't on camera that much, so he might be weeping. It's hard to say.
Oh, out of his
subjecting
cock.
Him in that way.
We might have gone too far.
Maybe.
This might be the time. Anyway, this is We Have Issues. We're about to talk about comics in a minute. Comic Felch.
Comic,
it's incoming.
Comics about
I'm
comics
not
about
call
porn.
That. No, you haven't read any comics about porn.
This week's this week's Oh Joy sex toy was about edging.
And
it was really interesting. Actually, it was a guest. It was a guest.
What's edging?
When you take people to the edge and but don't pop.
For men then.
Yeah, because I mean that's. I think generally women's experience of orgasms anyway, but for men, if you don't come very, very quickly, that is normally exceptional. Not quickly, I mean like directly, like anyway, so it was about Oh Joy sex toy was about edging.
Some of us have retarded ejaculation, it's no joke.
Oh, do they? You've never mentioned it, so it hasn't gone away like your diabetes.
Let me tell you about this very interesting webcomic, Nick.
Oh, Joy Sex Toy is amazing, but it wasn't by Erica Moen.
Fucking hell! Marv, I've had enough. I'm leaving. No, not really. That would normally be a cue for someone else to turn up. And I warn you,
I'm giddy
enough for him to turn up, so don't push your luck.
So, Joy Sex Toy, who was the guest? Because Erica Moen normally does it, and she's amazing.
I could have told them all that.
I know.
What are you doing?
He was
like leading you into your conversation.
No, you won't shut up.
Like when I was trying to talk about Ben Dover.
Dave, what's happening? You tell me. Right, what was that? No. So this is the thing. Oh Joy Sex Toy was about edging this week, and there's a guest artist whose name escapes me. I remembered it. I remembered it initially, but Nick.
I was the next one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course it is.
But Nick. And it was about, but what she'd done, she'd kind of. Gender mashups. So the character that looked like a lady was a man. And the character looked like a man, had lady parts.
Okay.
So, and I found it was really interesting.
Genderqueer.
Yeah. Hmm. It was really interesting. It's good.
Other people aren't there for your anthropological discovery, though, James. Those cartoon characters were just living their lives.
I understand about genderqueer, and I like to think I'm reasonably sort of on board with all this sort of stuff. I know I'm a little bit ignorant. I fucking try not to hate people just because of, like, you know, how their gender identification and their gender assignment doesn't necessarily marry up. Hmm. And I get that, and that's fine, and people should live their lives the way that they feel is most fit, unless, like, they're a killer or other awful things. But what I did learn is apparently most people who engage in edging like to use the safe word, clothes.
Is edging a thing people do with other people?
Well, hang on, you need to have a safe word. I don't get that.
Well, if it's all getting a bit too much and you need it to end, because it's kind of a sub-dom behaviour.
Can be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it can be part of that.
And they were talking about it being sub-dom, and apparently people like it. Close!
Because I guess some of the thing can be, you want to come now, don't you? And the other person says, yes, I do. But kind of the thing is you say, no, but you can't. And then you stop.
Make me come. I want to come now. And they're like, no, naughty, and hit it. And then you come anyway, just to spite them.
We managed to talk about this and it actually be about comics. That's quite good.
Yeah. So it's an act. It's not a device.
Edging?
Yeah.
No, it's not for like, it's not, I know, I understand the confusion because it sounds like something you'd use in a garden.
Well, when he said it, it sounded like it's some website that recommends sex toys.
No, Toy is a site that is a that they review sex toys. It's Eric Amone and sex toys and sexual behaviours and stuff like that. Not recommends, but like talks about them. It's really, really good. And it's always beautifully drawn, and all of the people they have involved in it are really good at comics, but yeah, do you know it hadn't occurred to me that edging is also part of.
She's a very good pole dancer,
Erica Moan.
Yeah,
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine me doing it. Well, I don't have the right center of gravity or something.
I'm getting increased strides. I was telling Jane, as I like to call her. About my
that's even her real name.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
About my good strong legs, and I reckon I could give it a, if I just need to work on my upper body a bit, but I reckon I could give it a go.
It's all about the core.
Yeah, well, my core's getting stronger too.
Why is that? Because of the cycling.
You got a bike?
He has apparently got a bike.
Had I not mentioned it? Yeah, no, I started cycling a few months ago. It's really good. I feel really healthy. It's nice. I'm still fat as fuck, but I feel healthy.
You'll get there. It's fine.
Yeah.
You're trying, at least. I'm not trying.
I keep shouting at my belly, close!
I think that's how it works.
No.
Safe words for bellies.
A bit for morbid obesity.
This is We Have Issues. We're about to sort of start talking about comics in a minute. This is episode 90.
Disruptive I want to be. It's definitely him, though, Dave, isn't it? It's definitely him.
Oh, you're talking to David Wynn. I thought you were just talking to some imaginary Dave. Yeah, I thought it was one of your, like, 1960s pop music references that you're always fucking making.
But for all intents and purposes, Dave Wynn is an imaginary character on the show when I'm talking to him, kind of, because he's not here. I know he exists, but in this moment, he's abstract.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like you're leaving a message for later on.
I'm sorry that you're not abstract in the real world while you're listening to this, Dave, but at this moment when this is happening, you are. Oh,
the problem with just talking to an unseen Dave is that there's a president in like
the United States
genre.
He's called Barack Obama.
No, there's a precedent. There's a precedent.
He said president, didn't he?
Precedent. No, I didn't.
Fucking did.
But there's a precedent in
the White House.
Science fiction genre.
President Cheese. Nice.
For monotonous idiots talking to an unseen Dave.
Is there?
That, yeah.
Is he calling
James, trigger.
He's basically calling you Donald Trump.
Nice.
Hal.
Very sad. Very sad.
Hal, Dave, Trump, what's his name? Trigger.
Dave Trump.
Dave Trump Trigger. And the guy off Red Dwarf.
I've got a
Holly.
Mexican broom. It's very sad. I've had it for many years. I've had it for many years. Very sad. And I've changed it 18 times.
It's good that you've finally decided you're going to do a Trump impersonation at the point where he goes so far off the rails that it isn't remotely funny anymore.
No, it's very sad. It's very sad.
But yeah, so Holly, as played by Norman Lovett.
They're all dead, Dave.
They're all dead, Dave. Dave, they're all dead, Dave. And Hal, I can't do that, Dave. And Trigger...
I can't let you do that, Dave.
So there are a lot of Daves, and you do have to clarify. I think you have to clarify.
So Dave's in good company.
David Wynn is in good company.
Yeah.
But they're all in better company because they're in company with David Wynn.
Some of them are dead, Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely dead Daves and alive Daves, and there's Daves yet to be born.
How many dead Jameses would you say there
are? Oh, not enough.
That wasn't a threat.
Was that? Were you suggesting to your Second Amendment friends that maybe there aren't enough dead Jameses? It's very sad. It's very sad, Nick.
Fucking, how far had I got?
He eats his Kentucky Fried Chicken with a spoon.
Oh my God, James!
What?
Seriously. Let's play the quiet game.
Literally, the whole internet has been... he's finally decided he's going to start getting some satirical gold out of Donald fucking Trump.
Do you know what? I tell you I don't trust.
Oh, God.
George Osborne.
Nobody trusts
Have you
George
noticed
Osborne.
He's got a funny haircut?
He shouldn't get honoured either.
And how comes he always looks like he's on the drugs?
I think that's been done as well, hasn't it? That's the joke.
Oh.
We have issues 90. I fucking hate you so much. My name's Nick. You can find me on Twitter at NickSite. Jane is over there.
Hi.
Long suffering.
Just thinking about ways of leaving the room. I'm on Twitter at CoverJane.
And James.
I did my last good podcast in 2013, and you can find me in a dustbin at the bottom of the hill.
No, because one of our slogans is at least 5 good minutes in every episode or your money back.
Oh, fuck. Oh, how much money
so
do we
there's always
these
at
nice
least
people?
5 good minutes. Yeah. And some of those are yours.
Well,
maybe about 30 seconds.
A nanosecond.
I like your voices.
I like the.
You do good voices.
I like your silences. They don't come often enough, but I like them.
You can listen to all of our previous episodes at wehaveissues.net. You can also subscribe to us at your podcatcher of choice, whatever that may be. And you can rate and review us there, or you can comment on any of the blog posts. We've got full show notes on the website for each episode. And there's a Facebook page, and there's a Twitter account for the podcast called Issues Pod. Issues Pod, all one word. And something else. Oh, yes. If you want to support us beyond just sharing, I just can't. It feels really weird asking people if they want to support us after the last 10 minutes.
Pay to stop. If
you'd like to pay for this old pony, then you can stump up some cash at Patreon.
Patreon.com/TOTP to support this and to grow men. And if you give us more than $2 a month, you'll get an extra podcast. I say an extra monthly podcast from James and his daughter Scarlett. But really the draw there is Scarlett. And perhaps today more than ever, the draw there is Scarlett. She's good. She's funny. I like her.
Yeah, she. I like her.
Where is she right now? What's she doing?
Ferndown. She's in Ferndown with her grandparents.
So she's not here recording with us?
No. You never know. My mum might phone up again during the podcast, so.
Yeah, just don't answer it next time.
No, fair enough. She told me I could have not answered it. I said, but you're my mum. She said, yeah, don't remind me.
At least she'll never disrupt another podcast.
Yeah, that'd teach her.
Unless we talk about her on every single podcast from now on. Remember that time when your mum called during the podcast?
Oh, and then, yeah, she's forever interrupting.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about comics?
You look shocked that you're bringing yourself to that. You should probably stop me from going on.
I felt like we didn't really do any catching up, but like I want to know what Jane's been up to, but it's like 20 minutes of us talking about edging.
Yeah, I feel partially responsible.
I can top that, to be honest. So,
Jane, close.
Excellent, that was good. I like that.
Thanks.
What have you been up to? Where have you been?
I
do a whimsy.
Oh,
I'll just tell the truth. Either one works.
I saw Suicide Squad.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I did.
I like the look of it. It looks okay.
It does what it needs to.
What is it? What does it need to do?
Entertain.
Good.
Mm. Isn't that what a film should always do? Entertain.
Mm, or inform.
It can do both.
It could, yeah. I didn't feel very informed. I felt very entertained.
Mm. That's fair enough.
And I didn't check my watch. That's a good sign.
That's a good sign. How long was it?
I don't know.
What,
two
a watch?
Hours? Something like that.
No, the film. 2 hours is a lot. See, I still think 2 hours.
No, it's less than 2 hours, I think, actually.
I want to start watching more horror movies because horror movies tend to always settle at an hour and a half. And as someone on another podcast I listened to said recently, if a horror movie is more than an hour and a half, it's probably doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Right, I'm prepared to bet that was either Travis Bickle on the Riviera or regular features.
It was Travis Bickle on the Riviera. They're good.
Why don't you just go and do a podcast with those guys?
They wouldn't have me.
No, that's true.
I keep wanting us to do an episode that I can point them at so that they'll think that we're amazing and all of the offers will start coming in, but we just haven't been able to do one.
No, that's fair enough. I want to know what's good that's just happened in James' life.
I feel bad if I say it out loud. It might jinx it.
Say it out loud.
What?
No. Go on. I'll tell you guys later.
Okay, that's good podcast.
Sorry.
Oh, that is good, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. It's awful. Ponies are now legal unicorns. There you go.
Brilliant.
Ponies are now legal.
So don't have to hide the horns anymore. Oh, or the rainbows.
Okay, that might be one of my favourite news pieces. So Suicide Squad was good.
Yes, it was good.
You criticised me on Ghostbusters. At least I can do proper talking.
Ghostbusters apparently didn't have a bad box office, even though it was reported widely that it did. It's all very confusing. People really want that film to fail.
I have seen Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters, and it was okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't love it. I won't, probably will never need to watch it ever again. There were some bits, for me, it was more missing the mark on a couple of things, and I think mainly to do with the relationship between the two main characters didn't really work for me, but it wasn't a bad film. They didn't burn the original copy of Ghostbusters or anything like
that's
that.
That's apparently almost impossible to do unless you're George Lucas.
That's what people think they've done, and it was better than Ghostbusters 2.
Outcome, because there is already a shit Ghostbusters film.
Yeah, so when people start moaning about shit Ghostbusters films, you had it 5 years after the first one.
Outcome, though, in his brand new, progressive, forward-thinking Ghostbusters from a new millennium, how comes a black person's not allowed to be a scientist?
I think that's covered in the film, James. We're really doing some hot takes from 6 months ago in this episode.
Yeah.
I think that's covered in the film.
Well, that was in the trailer. So people were talking about it 6 months ago. The thing about her being a scientist, not being a scientist.
I don't follow popular culture. Oh, so the film explains why the black person's not allowed to be a scientist. You know, someone fucking wrote it down. It didn't appear naturally in the world.
I don't know, James. You can choose that to be the thing about Leslie Jones's character that you talk about. But worse things have happened to Leslie Jones recently than not being the scientist in Ghostbusters.
Well, I don't like bigots, but I don't like it when bigots write films either. I tell you, I tell you what, I've had enough of white men not being able to say what they like. That's what's wrong with this world.
I've had enough of not being able to say what white men are like.
Fucking idiots for the most part, in my opinion.
Okay, so you've been our film correspondent. That was good.
Yeah, thanks,
James. Because James and I never go to the cinema.
I've been watching Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson quite a bit.
That does not count.
Yeah, I haven't really liked him since Doogie Howser. I quite liked when he was sending himself up in the Harold and Kumar movies. Those are really good, especially when they dealt with him coming out in between the second and third movies in the text of the third movie. That was very clever and funny.
That is hilarious misunderstanding of what I said. It's clever.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about Neil Gordon Taylor.
The last time, John Gordon Sinclair.
No.
The last time.
Gordon Lovett Smith.
You mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yeah. I got very confused about which was the better joke to make, whether it was a Degrassi Junior High one or a Mike Tyson one.
We agreed neither.
But I think Neil Patrick Harris might be the better one.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I'm going to stick with that.
He's in the Smurf films.
Also, I'm definitely going to call Vin Diesel Windowsill from now on. And I'm going to keep doing it online, and I'm going to keep doing it on the podcast, and everyone's just going to have to fall in line because I like it too much.
So now we're like a general pop culture podcast.
No, I was just trying to catch up with Jane.
Who do we think The Rock was having a pop at?
Vin Diesel. Apparently it was Vin Diesel.
Thank you for...
I don't know what you're talking about.
We could have let that topic run. It could have been really interesting. No, you have to cut me off at the pass. Unbelievable. I'm not allowed to say anything. Have you noticed that? Dave, tell him.
Back in your corner.
I'm sorry.
Jane, what comics did you read this week?
I was going to finish my pop culture
go on,
review.
Do currently.
And yesterday, No Man's Sky arrived.
Oh, yeah.
And
that
I worked
came out.
I did... 7.5 hours at work, just a bit over actually, and then 6 hours of playing a game.
Which was more rewarding?
The sleeping after the game.
Well, I didn't know that was going to be an option.
The 6 hours of sleep afterwards is more rewarding. The game's very good.
I was quite excited about the thought of No Man's Sky, and then I started playing a game called RimWorld a couple of weeks ago instead, because No Man's Sky wasn't out and I wasn't going to be able to get it anyway, and I'm just obsessed with that now. Well, I kind of want to be playing it right now. Not at home. And you probably feel the same way about No Man's Sky. It's not, I don't mean I want to be at home. I just, in my head, I'm kind of trying to strategize what I'm going to do in RimWorld as we're talking.
I got Rory McIlroy's PGA Tour 2017, I have to tell you.
So what's No Man's Sky like?
It's really lovely. I thought it'd be more eerie than it is, because when you're landing on a planet, it's a very strange terrain.
There's no terrain, there's no jellied food there.
And there's lots of very, very peculiar wildlife on one of the planets. It was basically a pot plant that was hopping around.
That's brilliant.
And it would get scared of you and run away. And you can feed them, and if you feed them, they'll go and find things for you. It's all very strange. But there's no real purpose to it. So you just sort of go around discovering stuff, and you think, oh, I'll get bored of this in no time. Because you think of GTA 5 and how much you can actually play that when you're not doing mission, and you quickly think, oh, I'm going to go to bed. This just kept going. You kept discovering new things. It was all
I like the
odd.
Sound of that.
Yeah, mechanics are really nice. I really enjoy it.
Rim mechanics are, I mean, that's a weird of you to mention a fetish you've got in the middle of the review.
That's a job in sometimes. I mention that because controls and games are usually like, oh, you have to get used to a new game. But this feels like it's had a lot of careful consideration, and it all feels very natural when you're playing the game, whereas in others, it's not like, why would you put the jump button as triangle? That doesn't make any sense.
In RimWorld, you can train pigs. You can raise pigs, and you can train them to go and fetch stuff for you, which is quite nice.
I used to like...
But it also is aimless. It's also kind of aimless. You're stuck on a planet. You're like two or three character people. Have you seen Prison Tycoon?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically that, but instead, you're at the same sort of look to it.
Oh, okay.
But you're dropped on this alien planet, and there's all these resources and animals knocking about, and you have to create your shelter and just, like, live on this planet.
Is this a thing where you have to build... You can build factories and things? No?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, not at the level I'm playing it at, but, like, I'm getting there. Not really factories, but you can smelt... You can have, like, little... Where you get people to fetch and carry, like, chunks of stone and metal and stuff, and then you can smelt them down and stuff like... I mean, I want to... Okay. It's really good. I want to hear about... James was talking about a game. What was it? Rory McGrath's what?
Rory McGrath's Bird Spotting Tour 2013.
Is it basically exactly the same as the 2012 one?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Apart from like the binocular mechanic is slightly tweaked.
Yeah.
So you can actually make a field note whilst holding the binoculars. But otherwise, it's very, very similar. Like the career mode's very similar to last year.
And as you level him up, you've got like, you can choose different pullovers.
And beard densities and stuff, yeah.
So they haven't, you still can't play women in it?
But you can still, no, of course not. You can upgrade your hide.
Uh-huh.
So like, you start off with a really basic wooden shack and then build up to this like sort of corrugated iron thing, which is quite nice.
I suppose that's nice, but I just feel like EA Games are overdoing it.
Yeah,
It's in the game.
I mean, the birds look good, but, you know, it gets a bit samey, I suppose, after a while.
It's just like those bend over videos I was talking about.
Yeah, that's true enough. I liked it in, you talked about pigs, I liked it in Total War Rome, where you could do the war pigs.
Oh, so God, yeah.
You set fire to your pigs and they run at elephants.
Yeah, it was awesome. Apparently that's the thing that people actually used to do.
Yeah, it was
as
it
a
was,
tactic.
It was when the Romans as a tactic against like the likes of Hannibal, who would attack them with elephants. They'd stuff pigs full of oil, set fire to them, and then make them run at the elephants freak the elephants out.
And of course, Hannibal smelt nice though.
And, probably. And of course, Hannibal never really saw it coming because he was too busy trying to wrangle BA and Murdoch, who were constantly at each other's throats.
I know we've made this joke before. I'm getting a horrible waves of deja vu.
Didn't they used to run pigs down through sewer pipes while on fire as well?
Yeah, probably.
And
just for a laugh.
And then they'd be all oily and explode, and then the place would be on fire and to break sieges and stuff.
I know that from watching Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos, that even though they knew lead caused poisoning, they still used it in their aquifers.
That's stupid. Why would they do that?
What's an aquifer?
You know, like a thing for water to flow through.
Oh.
And they did it because it was malleable and readily available. Just like you, Nick.
Should we talk about this week's comics or some comics? Should we just talk about some comics?
Yeah. I have this week's comic.
Just the one?
Just the one.
Cool.
There were no others this week. Wow. Not by my standards.
Brilliant. You've damned every comic that's come out this week. I love that, apart from one. Fantastic. Take that, DC and Marvel.
Yeah, it's an Image comic.
Yeah.
It usually is. So I picked up the Black Monday Murders, issue one. Yes. Written by Jonathan Hickman and the art by Tom...
Coker.
Oh, Coker.
Oh, what did you just say?
Cocker.
Oh, can you not say Coker?
Cocker.
Coker.
Coker.
It doesn't have a C in it. It's C-O-K-E-R.
Yeah.
Coker.
Well, I was taking a glance at it really quickly and just say...
Sorry, did he just say it doesn't have a C in it?
It doesn't have a C.
And then said C-O-K... The first fucking letter's a C!
It doesn't say... it doesn't...
Sorry,
it
sorry,
doesn't have
Jane.
Two C's in it. James, darling.
Yeah.
It's good, Mike Croft. When you're going to scream to move away from the mic, not towards it.
Nick, there's every chance I might be a bit giddy today, so I make no apologies.
And to Mr. Coker, I sincerely apologise for what just happened.
So, your fault.
I was.
It's her fault we're doing a podcast with you.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
She wanted me to say cock, and I feel bad now.
No,
fucking
hell. Why would you laugh and then realise your mistake?
Oh.
She's relying on your internal humiliation.
I'm feeling quite a lot of it now, and I'm feeling really guilty about doing that to Tom Coker as well, because, you know.
I've apologised. Your comic's really, really good.
Oh, there that's go. Made it yeah. up for me being yeah. an arsehole.
What have you said? Both. Anyway, going back to the Black Monday murders. It starts in 1929 in New York City with the stock crash.
Mm.
Yes. And the floor has opened, trading has started, and things aren't going well. And the... I'm painting a picture.
It's good.
She's not an economist, James. She's a storyteller. Leave her alone. Oh,
well, yeah, yeah. Thank you, Nick. Well, we know how it all ends, don't we?
That's why I laughed.
And one of the fat cats, I believe they're referred to in that day.
Old fat cats.
Old fat cats is in the top of a very fancy building. And he starts having a nosebleed.
Mm.
Yes, a very severe nosebleed.
The fuck was that noise?
That was my interested noise.
Mm. He sounded like the Cheshire Cat.
Oh. Oh. I can't see. I can't do it on purpose. Sorry, go on, Jane.
Okay. And as... he's having his nosebleed. He's talking to some of his old fat cat colleagues, and it seems this isn't weird. No one is freaking out about him having this epic nosebleed. They are sort of like, oh, well, it's your turn. The stock is down, and it's your turn.
Oh, that's weird.
It is weird. And there are symbols throughout. So, you know, when things are dark magic, or mm-hmm. even just magical, I think, in comics, and they have the black speech bubble with the white outline, the words in white, or whatever it is in white.
I'm aware of the conceit.
Yes. And so there's lots of that. So you definitely get a feeling that, well, you later find out there's something more at play here than just regular trading. I haven't read anything about this comic, so I don't really know what the... idea is behind it, if there's sort of a how we got to this story kind of story, but after the sort of opening part, it then goes on to talk about Death March.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives a definition of a Death March and then starts talking about how urban legends can become not just urban legends, but how things become truth. How if someone says it, or there's enough people to say something, and it feels like a reliable source, it just becomes the truth.
Yeah.
And it goes on to talk about setting up a database or a website where everything on it is to debunk these kind of myths and urban legends, but the premise will be it's completely open source, everyone can do whatever they want with it, they can check it, but that everything is a lie anyway, but they'll they'll formulate a way to perceive it as the truth.
Mm.
That's
weird.
Yeah. And that's why, because this is just one page in the comic. It's very out of the story, but kind of with the story, because after that opening act, it's playing on the legend that after the stock crash, or the day of the stock crash, people were jumping out of the building committing suicide. It claims here that was false. That didn't happen. It was a mistaken identity by Winston Churchill.
Mm. Winston Churchill.
But the idea that is manifesting in this comic is that things that you think would have happened, or why couldn't what the story is being told be the truth, or is it all just an urban legend kind of thing? So that puts an interesting dynamic into the story. The second part of the story is then set in modern day. It's still continuing this theme of the second part, that's sort of like before the end of the first part. So the second part is modern day, and it's talking about how there's more the theme of this dark power at play, and it still centres around finance, that finance market, but this time modern day police are involved in a murder and that's been investigated. So it's got quite a traditional sort of story arc forming with it, an investigation to murder, but this very supernatural element to it. But there's more than one supernatural element to it as well. Right. So there's different kinds of magics that are potentially at play here. It's really unusual. Like I said, I didn't know anything about it. I just selected it because the cover looks really nice. It's actually, I don't know if the cover's done by a different artist, so I just quickly go back here. But
it wasn't a Jonathan Hickman. Is it like a? Is it art on the cover, or is it like a design?
I'd say it's definitely art. It's not coloured, but it's definitely art. It doesn't specify who did the cover art. But it was really unusual, and I really like the title as well, The Black Monday Murders. Feels like, you know, most Mondays. Go through your head. First thing.
Sunday. Bloody Sunday. Yeah. Doesn't it just perfectly capture the tedium of a Sunday?
It's the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the day after. That's a good point.
Tom Coker's art is incredible. It really is gorgeous in this. It captures that 1920s noir feel.
Noir.
Complemented by the colouring, which is done by Michael Garland. So both work really, really, really incredible together. And then the modern day, still that kind of noir, but a shift to modern day rather than in the 20s. So that's quite nice and quite subtly done. It's very wordy, which is good.
That's Jonathan Hickman.
It is Jonathan Hickman.
Jonathan Hickman was wordy.
Sometimes quite dense. There's lots of information around here, so you do get to understand a little bit about, it's not just about a magical power, but it's also about people power as well, power of getting to the top of somewhere, the power of aggressively getting somewhere as well. So everyone has their place, and that's all very intricately detailed in segments of it as well. So it's really good. $2.99.
That's good.
Get a lot for your money. I think it's like 58 pages.
Wow.
I was talking to someone in a comic shop yesterday, and they were saying that they perceive that they have taken quite a hit with the combination of ridiculously high price, like cover prices at Marvel, and the fact that the pound isn't doing very well at the moment. That they can see that people are just dropping, like really reducing their standing orders and stuff, which, you know, was kind of felt good for me, because I've been saying that's going to happen. Comics are too expensive for a really long time. But not good, because I don't want people to stop being able to buy comics.
Sorry, it's 54 pages.
That's really good for $2.99.
Yes. Well,
which is about a fiver in current British money.
It's £2.99, which is the amount of your house. No, I think $2.99 is now what your house is worth.
Yeah, probably. That's probably true.
It's very good. I highly recommend it. And I'm sorry, Mr. Coker.
I love his art so much.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
He's very good.
Sorry for the silliness.
I don't think we can really... I mean, I don't think that... I think we can apologise for the silliness, but I think it's pointless at this point.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, luckily, though, because we do the time stamps at the beginning, it's possible to direct people straight to their review so they don't have to hear all that stuff about porn earlier on.
Yeah, I won't know what I'm apologising
for. Yeah, don't go back and listen.
Yeah, don't. It's not worth it. Just know your comic's amazing, and I'm recommending to all of listener to pick it up.
Thank you, Jane.
Hello, George Beedham here. You all know who I am. You might not know that I've recently joined Instagram like all the cool kids. I'm on there as Mighty GB, that's GWBIE. I occasionally post pictures of artwork and then, if I'm honest, most of it's just screenshots of Pokemon Go. Anyway, that's not what I've phoned up. That's not what I wanted to talk to you about. Yes, my contribution today is going to be about All New X-Men Volume 1. It's the one after Secret Wars and before Civil War and before whatever next event is. I don't know. Something about Apocalypse? Oh, never mind. So Comixology had a sale a little while ago with the new Marvel Now trades on offer, so I picked up this one and thought I'd let you know what I thought about it. Dennis Hopeless is writing, Mark Bagley is on pencils, Andrew Hennessy does the inks, and Nolan Woodard is on colours. I haven't heard of him, but he does alright. So just to set the scene a little bit, these are the time displaced X-Men from the 60s, now in the 2010s. Trying to make sense of their place in the modern world. This one sort of focuses on Cyclops, or at least the first story arc does, because, you know, X-Men. I kind of dig this whole young Cyclops thing, to be honest, because he's dealing with some identity issues with, like, whatever his older self did besides basically becoming a supervillain. We know he did something to piss off the Inhumans between Secret Wars and the start of this book, but we don't know exactly what that is. That's kind of what I like about this book. It doesn't delve into the mainstream Marvel continuity too heavily. It's sort of still an X-Men book on the periphery, if that makes any sense. It felt like a classic X-Men story. Hopeless does a really good... It's an unfortunate surname, that, because every time you say it, you just think, oh, well, he's rubbish, isn't he? But Hopeless... I've just thought it's probably not his actual surname, is it? It's probably a pseudonym. Get to the point, George. Yes, he does a really good job on sort of echoing themes of the past, if that makes any sense. So all the characters, it's very sort of soap opera-y in the way that sort of Claremont used to write his X-Men. Like all the characters have their own issues going on. You've got Cyclops, like I say, dealing with his identity crisis. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong company. You've got Beast, who is also having a bit of a crisis of confidence, because he's gone from being the smartest guy in any room in the 60s to, well, he's still bright, but he doesn't really understand the technology of today. Like, he designed an incident tracking device and then was told, why don't you just check Twitter? Which, of course, we all know to do, but why would you know if you've suddenly been dumped in the present day by your older, furry blue counterpart? Time travel's weird, isn't it? So you've got Cyclops, you've got Beast. Iceman has recently come out and is trying to sort of deal with all that nonsense. Not nonsense. Difficult to process issues, I would imagine. You've got Angel, who is struggling to come to terms with his badass girlfriend, who is now the new Wolverine, and seems to be on fire every other day and horrifically beaten up the rest of the time. So he's he wants to be protective of her, but she can't. She's kind of indestructible, so it's kind of moot and it's kind of awkward at the same time. It brings me on to the non-time displaced members of the team, because you've got Laura, the new Wolverine, Idy from Generation Hope, who does fire and ice stuff, and then you've got Evan, aka Genesis, aka Kid Apocalypse, probably be revealed to be a Summers brother at some point as well. Why not? Because X-Men. Yeah, it's a really good book, actually. I'm sort of meandering a lot, but the point was, this is a really good book. The structure is a little bit weird for a trade, because you've got the first storyline, which is three or four issues, but then you've got the next one, which is only a couple of issues, but it normally, you know, you Marvel have been quite good at doing six issue story arcs, then you've got your trade, but this has a short first story arc introducing everyone, deals with a group calling themselves the Ghosts of Cyclops, which understandably irritates the younger Scott Summers quite a bit. Yeah, and then when that's all wrapped up, you get the next storyline, but you only get two issues of it. It's not like leading, it's not like ending on a like cliffhanger. It's ending quite abruptly in the middle of a book, which seems odd to me. Anyway, I'm running out of path walking down here. And I think I've wasted enough of your time, quite frankly. So go and buy All New X-Men Volume 1. If you like your classic X-Men, you'll probably already be reading this, because I'm quite late to the party. But yes, it's good. It's well worth a look. Bagley's art sometimes irritates me, but it's when he's doing younger people is it's good. He's still Bagley. He's still quite samey in the face and all the rest of it, but it's quite similar to his Ultimate Spider-Man stuff, which worked quite nicely for a bit, didn't it? So yeah, not really any complaints apart from the weird book structure. I did start to wrap that up then, didn't I, and then started waffling again. Oh, screw it, I shall talk to you later, goodbye.
I read a couple of comics that came out this week, and they were right. I read some DC, like Superwoman had really pretty art and was nicely enough written by Phil Jimenez, and someone else inked him. I can't remember. That was number one. That was nice. And also Batman All-Star number one was written by Scott Snyder, with art by John Romita Jr. and colours by Dean White, I think, who just made it look amazing. And then there's a backup story that was okay by Snyder, with art by Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair. And like, they were both good comics, but and people are loving this DC rebirth thing, I think, because they were there's a lot of complicated stuff going on with DC 52 being recent enough that it's in people's memory, and people having really low expectations but having seen it turn out okay last time. So like, and the comics, the quality of the comics has been good. They've been really well made, But I did get to the end of each of them, and this has been the same with nearly all of the ones I've read, and think, but it's still just continuity porn, though. It's still, like, in both Superwoman and All-Star Batman, there seemed to be so much reliance on you. The stories don't totally rely on you knowing what's gone on before, but there's loads of reference to the fact that there's more than one Batman, and he keeps saying, oh, I'm trying something new, and you get the feeling you need to know a bit more about what's been going on in those books or be more tuned in than to know what's going on. But the John Romita Jr. art is fucking amazing. It looks so good with those colours on it. And the same with Superwoman. It's a gorgeous looking book, but it's like there's reference to there being, like, Superman's died, but there's two other Supermen knocking about, and one of them's Clark Kent, and I know that there's also the Superman hyphenated, which is how they get around having an Asian Superman, but not disrupting things too much for themselves, which is a little bit weird. And so there are, like, there's more than one Superwoman, and it's all very confusing, and I don't really, and all of how everyone got their powers and everything is tied into previous stuff. So it just felt like, well, and that was a good first issue, but it just feels like we're going to be going straight back into more continuity after this. I don't, too much that I just don't understand. Lex Luthor's apparently Superman now. What the fuck? And so is the Asian guy, and so is A. Clark Kent, but it's not, I just don't understand it. I'm having a bit of trouble.
You sound confused.
You do.
Mm.
So anyway, that isn't my review. I just wanted to, I have tuned in, and I know that's, a lot of people like that sort of thing, and that's fine. I find it a little bit weird. Just go easy on the continuity. We don't have to have continuity porn. Yeah. Anyway, so, I saw that there was a new issue of Harrow County out this week, and every time I see Harrow County on the shelves or online, I think, oh, that looks nice. That looks like the sort of book I should be reading. Why am I not reading that? It's from Dark Horse, and it's like a horror, like a period piece, I guess, set in the Great Depression or the turn of the last century. It's in America, and it's in a small, like, rural town, and people have cars, but they're old jalopies, and it's a generation on from some really old-fashioned-y stuff going on, so I think it must be the turn of the last century-ish. And it seems like something I'd really like, but the latest issue came out, and I was like, I can't just dive into something like that on the latest issue. So what I did instead was, the creative team's still the same in the latest issue, so I read the first arc, which I think is issues 1-5. It's written by Cullen Bunn with art by Tyler Crook, and it's, as I said, it's set in a period piece America. I think Depression era America or Dust Bowl. Are they the same period?
The Dust Bowl, yeah, coincided with the Depression.
Yeah.
So,
and funnily enough, the solution that they put in place to get over the lack of water, because what happened was they basically ripped up all of the land and turned it over to it, but it meant it exposed the topsoil, and the winds picked it up and started blowing it up. Yeah. And it was dreadful, but they used this huge aquifer that was underneath the probably using that word correctly now, underneath, it goes from like Canada all the way down to Texas.
Uh-huh.
And they've almost used it all up, so America could be in danger of having another Dust Bowl.
Oh my goodness. Mm. That's no good. Mm. That sounds really depressing.
Well,
anyway,
the Depression was depressing.
I tried to get a sense of exactly when. I don't think it does tell you what year it's set in. Mm. But it's that sort of era. Everyone's 30s. Wearing like shitty old clothes.
Probably the 30s.
Yeah. And it's set in a place called Harrow County, and it starts with a scene-setting sequence where a bunch of town folk are... It tells you about this woman who used to heal people, and everyone in the... Like, loads of people in the town liked her. Her name's Hester Beck, and everyone in the town liked her. Made people feel better and stuff like that. But then they... like realized there were rumors about her consorting with demons in the woods and that human sacrifice and stuff like that, so she was burned as a witch, and as she was being, they shot her and everything, and then they strung her up from a tree and they burned her as a witch, and as she was dying, she said she'd come back and do bad things to the people who'd done this to her, sort of thing. And then it cuts to sometime later, like several years later. It doesn't really tell you how long. And it shows you the tree that she was hung from. And it's now on a farm. I think it was at the edge of a forest before, and now it's on a farm. And there's a little girl she's actually not a little girl. She's turning 18, who lives there with her father on the farm. And there are weird doings going on. She seems perfectly normal. She's a bit sheltered. She's not been allowed to go into the town or anything, but she's lovely. She's instantly likable. Her name's Emmy, and she's instantly likable. And the relationship that her and her father have with the town is apart, but still part of the community sort of thing. At one point, you see this old black guy and his granddaughter turn up in a cart, and they're like traders. They have canned goods and everything, and it alludes to Emmy knowing that her father doesn't like the old man, but she doesn't really understand why. And my immediate thought was that's just letting you know that this guy's like her. It's older. It's a period of time when a black trader might have been. I thought it was a race thing, but then it turns out there's secrets under the surface and conversations being had outside of Emmy's, like she's not privy to, and she's very close friends with that guy's granddaughter, and that's quite nice actually. That friendship plays out a little bit later on in the story, but Emmy, there's also a calf is born, and it turns out that there are two calves, but one of them's just dead. It's like died and all bloody in the corner and stuff, and the calf that's still alive is fast dwindling, and her father is very matter-of-fact farmer, says, oh, I'd better put her out of her misery, goes in to get a shotgun, and by the time he comes back out, the calf's just fine. And Emmy was just, she doesn't realize anything's happened. She was just holding it and like trying to tend to it, and it's fine afterwards. So there's stuff going on, and people are clearly worried that Hester Beck has somehow found a way. They're all keeping a very close eye on Emmy, and that's clear by the end of the first issue. The main characters in this issue, it's really, really weird, are probably Hester Beck, who dies very early on in the flashback, and then Emmy, and the tree is a really focal point as well, because at some point the narrative tells you at some point it got hit by lightning and the core of it like split open, and they filled it up with concrete, so it's got this hole. Wow. The tree's just there. They filled it up with concrete to try and stop the rot moving, but it's just kind of, there's some really vivid description of how the tree is rotting away from the concrete now, and things progress, and it becomes very clear that there's supernatural stuff going on. It's all very witchy. There are ghosts in there as well. There's some incredibly A lot of the mythology in it is very familiar. It's very it's stuff you recognise, like witchcraft and demons in the wood and ghosts and all sorts of stuff like that. But at the same time, there's one idea that is kind of showcased on one of the early covers, and the covers are gorgeous to this comic. I think they're probably by Tyler Crook. I should have checked really. There's one sort of horror idea for a character, a story riff in this that I had never seen before, which is really, really cool. And I don't want to spoil it, but anyone who's read it might know what it is, and I don't want to ruin it for anyone who will read it. But there is a supporting character in it who I had never seen this idea done before. And things get worse for Emmy before this arc actually plays out, and you find out a lot more about what's gone on in this first arc. Actually, these first few issues, it is quite a satisfying initial arc. It makes you want to read more, but it doesn't drop loads of mysteries that you're just going to be waiting to unfold. It'd be quite a satisfying first volume on its own, like just read on its own, I think. It's interesting in both writing style and art, because Cullen Bunn does this thing where sometimes it's super evocative and lyrical and you're getting Emmy's voiceover, but she obviously doesn't know the whole story, so there's stuff being alluded to without actually coming through. But then it is explicit at times. There are info dumps, and they're really nicely handled. The way everybody's characterization is good. Some characters talk with a sort of an old-fashioned dialect, but it's not really overwhelming. And Tyler Crook's art is really similar as well. You could see it being really cute. It reminds me of a sort of a mix of Carla Speed McNeil's really bold lines and Jill Thompson's watercolors. So you can tell where everybody is in place at all times, and the characterization is really good. The acting on the characters' faces is really, really good, and some of the creature design is really interesting and stuff like that as well. And settings are really evocative, but the way it's all rendered with this like watercolor wash also makes it most of the time it seems really whimsical and beautiful, but then that just makes the, when you see a splash of gory blood, the first time you see it is the cows in the calf in the shed, and it's just like, oh, okay, that's way more like gross and instantly shocking, because the rest of the art is so pretty and the lines are so bold and it's almost cartoony in style. It's really good. This first arc is really good, and I want to catch up. I think it's on issue 15 or 16 that came out this week, and so I really want to catch up to that, and I think I will do quite quickly. The one thing that's a little bit weird about it, and I've read a couple of things recently, but we've seen a couple of films recently as well that just go from this. It feels like maybe before The Craft and Charmed, we were getting to an understanding of witches as maybe they weren't actually, that maybe there is witchcraft. You've got like white witchery and stuff like that, but it's really just pagan medicine, and it's not that outlandish. And they're just women who are practicing a different religion who got singled out because of some Christian puritanical stuff that was going on at the time. That seemed to be where we were heading. And then The Craft turned them into this thing where it isn't a religion people practice. It's a thing that you get. It's like superpowers, basically. You don't train to be a witch. You don't learn all of these rituals or any of that stuff. You're just kind of born, and normally it's because your mum was a witch or something like that, and so that's how you end up with it. And now that seems to be where we are, full-blown, where it's just a given. Like, it used to be that when you... I think I grew up with stories of the persecution of people as witches as being entirely about communities just turning on vulnerable people. Like, that's what the stories were about. They were about people being tried as witches when witches aren't really a thing, but they were just being tried as them anyway. And now we seem to have swung right back round to where in stories it's just acknowledged. They're just like a whole other race or species that exists alongside us, like vampires or demons or something like that. And they're just there. And nearly all of our stories, positive or negative, seem to, you know, positive representations or negative seem to be like that. So we saw The Last Witch, I think it was The Last Witch Hunter, which we quite enjoyed, which is a Vin Diesel film. And The Witch, which is another one that's set in roughly the same era as Harrow County, I think, or maybe a bit earlier, which is really similar. It's just in these stories, it's just a given that witches are a real thing. They're just a real thing. And they can do all that stuff. They can fly and turn themselves into animals and stuff like that. It wasn't just a whole period in history where all a woman had to do was be a little bit different and she was probably going to get drowned. And that always makes you feel a little bit icky when I see a story like that.
Because unlike vampires and werewolves and other shapeshifters, there was nothing, no one ever suspected a vampire and then tried to kill them, and actually it was just a person.
Certainly
whereas
not
witches, people were being prosecuted and then killed for being a witch when they weren't. So
yeah.
Because it was an excuse to, it was used to hurt people, whereas other things were just a myth. Not even a myth, they're just a story.
I think there are periods in folklore, there are periods in history or folklore where people did believe in those other things, but the witch stuff is really recent by comparison. It did happen, like it happened in America, which is still a relatively young country. So there are parts of Eastern Europe where vampires were a thing. They weren't a thing, but people believed they were a thing, and they were like digging up relatives and if there was a blight or something, they'd dig up a relative and chop their heads off and stuff like that because they thought they were a vampire. But yeah, witches were a thing where real life, yeah. And it's recent enough that there are records of it, written records of it. And yeah, so it makes me feel a bit weird. But still, this comic's great. Oh, it's really good.
So going on the premise of this comic, that witches are real, that they're real powers, and they had a witch that was curing them of all their diseases and ailments and other things that were causing them problems, and they were quite happy for her to do that, and then decided, oh, actually, you're doing some stuff we don't like, we're going to kill you. Wouldn't you be worried that by killing them would undo all the things they'd already done, and then you'd end up with everything back?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I don't...
You know, like in Ghostbusters, when they release a ghost, all the ghosts come out, they don't just die.
Yeah, no, that's true. They're not just gone. Yeah, I don't think they were really thinking that clearly.
People don't, though, do they?
They don't.
That's the first thing I thought of when you were describing it. I was like, ooh.
What if all the magic they've done is just undone?
What if cancer comes back? You know, it's just like...
It's almost like, you know, we burn lots and lots of things that put stuff in the environment that we know will trigger a global warming incident that could then trigger a mass extinction event, but we still do it because people are stupid.
I think olden days people in particular were stupid.
No, we're stupid too.
But I think you're reading of, like, I think when people started using fossil fuel, they maybe didn't realise that it was going to set off global warming.
No, but...
Global warning, but, more like... But people need a global warning about global warming.
No, but I'm just saying that stupidity is a part of the human condition that doesn't really wear off, because we're still burning it, even though we know full well that it could well kill our civilization.
What we need is more people riding bikes.
That's not what I was saying. What we need is more investment in clean technology.
And more people riding bikes.
Well, if you want, but that's not going to get you to the fucking moon, is it?
Do we have to get to the moon in this
scenario? Yeah, of course we do, because eventually...
Charity begins at home, James.
Eventually the sun will turn supernova and it will engulf the Earth. So we need to get the fuck off this rock before then.
We need to get to one of Jupiter's moons. Jupiter is the best planet in the solar system.
All these moons are yours. You can do what you want with those, but leave this one alone.
There's no point.
That's from 2010.
There's no point any of us...
The film, not the year.
There's no point any of us being alive if we're not going to try and perpetuate the species and get off this crummy little rock, is there?
I think we need to worry about running out of resources before we need to worry about the sun going supernova.
Ultimately,
we'll be dead away
if we don't, the sun will engulf the planet.
But we'll be consuming. That's never going to happen. That's always going to happen.
Consuming every trace and every record that we ever existed, thereby meaning that we pretty much don't exist anyway.
That's fine. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I don't want that, but I honestly think that at some point the readership is going to start dwindling anyway, and it'll have a much lesser impact. James.
I always think it's a bit cheeky calling your paper the Star, because it's the same fucking thing, isn't it?
Yes. Do you want to do that again? Because I just shout on the beginning of it.
I always think it's a cheat calling your paper the Sun, because it's the same fucking thing, innit?
No, you
did
said the Star.
Did it wrong.
It's the Star, not the Sun. You said the Sun the second time.
Three, two, one. I always think it's a fucking cheat calling your paper the Star, because it's the same fucking thing, innit?
Yeah.
Which one of those was the best?
The last one.
Really, it was the best
one,
was it?
Did you not? Are you not hearing yourself as you're saying stuff?
Well, the thing is, Nick, I got really giddy at the end of the beginning of this show. I was really excited to see Jane. It's been a long time since three of us have been in the...
It's a long time since you saw me.
In the same... Well, no, I saw you at the weekend. But I like you. I don't see enough of you these days. It makes me feel sad. It's been a long time since the three of us got together, and I've forgotten how much I enjoy this dynamic. I got a little bit giddy and carried away, and I got into this little bit of a crest of a wave and a high, but then I had to be a good boy and be quiet while you two did your reviews, and now I feel like I've come down, and I feel wretched now.
Oh, this is really good timing for your review.
That should make for a better review than being really giddy.
I feel fucking empty. It's horrible. I feel really hollow.
Thank you, Nick. That sounds really good.
It is.
I suppose because it was a mid-arc or beginning arc. It wasn't number one or close. I would probably
It was a whole chunk of story.
I'm sorry. I thought we were done. I'm really sorry. I thought we were done. I feel bad. I'll just shut the fuck up otherwise.
What? You didn't do anything.
He has now, though. He's created an editing nightmare.
It's a bit fucking cheeky calling your paper the Star, but essentially it's the same fucking thing.
Oh, he's on repeat.
Hello, we have issues. It's Maxi, as always. Gonna talk a little bit off script. It's like a multiple attempt at recording thing because this gets kind of long as an introspective thing. I'm going to be talking about comics ending for a few weeks. There's a few things ending in Shonen Jump, and there's a series I finally read to the theoretical end to in Western comics. So I'm going to talk about these a little bit. This one's going to be completely unscripted. It might not work for everything, but this goes outside the actual series I'm talking about. The series I'm talking about is Nisekoi by Naoshi Komi. Long-time followers of this podcast and the one before may have heard me mention it back when this was called the Monkey on My Back podcast. It was a very early contribution for me, and I basically adored it. I did one of my most popular episodes of Friendship Effort Victory was about Nisekoi. I'm incredibly fond of this record-breaking romance series about the son of a Yakuza family, the daughter of a gangster family, and the love they have to pretend to have. And it's fantastic. There's a love triangle involving, like, a bakery girl, a girl who works at a bakery, not a girl who is a bakery, don't be weird. And it worked for 5 years. Romance series kind of have a really set lifespan, because if you progress the story too fast, you end. If you don't progress it fast enough, nobody's reading, and it ends. And Nisekoi maintained the balance for a really long time by kind of doing a lot of side stories that related to the sort of ongoing mess, but was about introducing more characters or scenarios where the characters would learn stuff about each other by how they would deal with unusual situations, like helping a lost girl, or getting lost in the woods, or doing a play. And those were all fantastic, and it dragged it out. A lot of people were down on it and thought it was filler. I don't buy the idea that something's filler if it's by the original creator, because that's their story they're telling, and fuck you. But it's over, and it's a significant ending. It's one of my favourite Shonen Jump comics I've ever read. I followed it from when it first started coming out to its ending on a weekly basis. That's phenomenal to me. 5 years of solid reading, 20 pages a week, every week. And it's one of a series of things ending. We had Naruto end a couple of years ago now, although it's got a sequel series now that's like once a month. Bleach is ending in 2 weeks. Gintama is ending soon. Toriko is ending incredibly soon. Like, these titles may not mean something to all of you, but significantly they're all titles that were for what we'd call my era of Jump. Weekly Shonen Jump as a magazine is aimed at teenage boys. It has a larger audience than that, but there's the idea of graduating from the magazine. People will generally read it from about 10 or 13 until they're about 21, and then they'll move on to Young Jump and eventually Grand Jump, formerly Business Jump, to give you an idea of the audience for that magazine. And I feel like at the point where nearly every series except for One Piece that's like come out over the period I was reading it at the right age, I suppose, like when they're all ending, is that the magazine trying to tell me to move on? And that's an interesting feeling, because I'm still enjoying a lot of stuff from the magazine. And for those who don't read the magazine, Weekly Shonen Jump, by the way, digital service, about 60p an issue, Android or iPhone, Japanese magazine, put out in English by Viz Media with a selection of titles from the Japanese because there's too many. 200 pages of content, 60p a month. It's perfect. It's wonderful. And some of the current series, World Trigger, Black Clover, My Hero Academia, are some of the best comics I've frankly ever read. On the other hand, they're very clearly not aimed at me. And I shouldn't feel too bad about that, because I read the Sonic comics from Archie Action, and they're very much aimed at a younger audience. But I feel like they have more of an all-ages feel, whereas a lot of Weekly Shonen Jump is rested in that feeling of teenage cool. So I find myself with a conundrum that the magazine I've been reading for the majority of my like active comic reading life, where I've been thinking of it like, I'm reading comics because I'm a comics fan, like, it might not be for me anymore. I can't decide how I feel about that. Regardless, Nisekoi is a record holder. It's the longest running romance series from the magazine. I mean, I've done a podcast about this magazine. I know from records. And it's well worth a read. You can read it in volumes in print, digitally on Kindle and Comixology and the like. And it's entirely worth it. It's one of the best romance series you could ever read. I feel like it ending is a message to me, though. Not directly. Now Shikomi doesn't know who I am. That would be really fucking weird. But But I was wondering if any other comic readers, because let's be fair, a lot of the people on this podcast and a lot of people who listen are of what's becoming an advanced age. No offence. You're old. You're very mortal. And you're old. But do you guys have this, like, with DC or Marvel comics where you've read through multiple creators? Like, I can't say I've ever really had the feeling, because it's serialised fiction with multiple creators, unlike manga's single or dual creator system. But do you guys ever feel like something you've been following for a long time just isn't for you anymore? Tell me on Twitter at Maxi_Barnard, or I don't know, write into the show. Nick hand out a mail address? I'm pretty sure he doesn't. Does he have a PO box? A pissed off box, because he gets mad about things in comics? This contribution's gone on too long. Bye!
James, what have you got there? No, wait, let me guess. Is it the latest issue of Spider-Man?
Well, I'll give you a clue. It's a box about the size of a mini fridge.
Is it? You liked that, didn't you? I mean, you're plenty giddy enough. You're going to be fine.
Okay.
Is it Italian?
It's what Italian?
The thing you're going to be talking about.
I don't think so.
Is it American?
It's got an Italian in it.
Has it?
Yeah.
What is it? What are you going to do? What are you going to talk about?
What am I going to do?
What book are you going to talk about?
What are any of us going to fucking do? I've got no clue, mate.
You've got a book in front of you.
Oh, I have, haven't I? I've got Asterix and the Secret Weapon. It's a book about Asterix and the Secret Weapon deployed by Julius Caesar.
Okay.
There is one thing I really didn't like about that cover.
What, that it's the worst cover of any Asterix book ever?
But the dagger and the rose.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Is that just... What I'm imagining is someone in the publishing company who publishes other books had a romance novel that they were going to publish and had a cover for it, and it went into WordArt or wherever it is they get their covers from.
I think it would have been WordArt back then, yeah.
And just selected a dagger and a rose, but left it on this cover by accident because they were doing two at the same time, and then sent it off without even realising.
You reckon it's an early example of clip art? Would you want to... You describe the cover.
I think Jane has just enough understanding of how things work in a big publisher that she could probably write a sitcom that would only offend people who actually work in that industry. And everyone else would think it was hilarious.
And screw those guys anyway, innit?
What I'm saying is it just looks incredibly out of place.
It does look
weird. Like, it's just got left there. Someone left it there for something else.
Where all of the writing's weird as well. The writing placement's weird.
And that's what I thought about that book.
So anyway, what happens in this book?
Don't judge a book by its cover.
Dave, I didn't spend the first 5 minutes of their review shitting on the cover of their books, did I?
No, you couldn't see any of our covers.
Fucking see your cover. I'll fucking cover you.
James, tell us about the book.
Cover you with a sack with broken glass in it and hang you from a tree. So this is Asterix and the Secret Weapon. Which was written Albert Hurst on account of Ronnie Goscinny being dead at this point.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, well, you see, you were fucking about, but there was sadness. And it's from 1991, so this is the year I left school. This came out.
It's 15
really
years
that
old.
Recently?
No, not 15 months.
I wish it was 2006
so badly. It's 25 years. I really wish it was 2006.
Let's see. It was a World Cup that year, wasn't it? 2002 Germany, wasn't it? So yeah, that's all right. I preferred 2002 World Cup. I tell you, we got mightily
fucked up.
So 91,
I was grown by then. I was grown. Mm. You were as well.
Yeah, it was the year after Italia 90.
Okay.
My relationship with my wife was 1 year old.
Ah, oh, like a 1 year old.
Yeah.
What about this book? Tell
like
us
a
about
1 year old, if that 1 year old is 2 16 year olds that are.
Fucking.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Tell us about the book.
Okay, so it's basically a book that's set. In the time of Julius Caesar, about this Gaulish village. So it's post the Gaulish conquerage. It's part post. You can edit around this. It's fine. it's a bit cheeky calling it the star.
Why don't you just abbreviate it like PPG?
Okay, it's Ubbot. Ah, can't really abbreviate ah.
Okay, well just use initial it.
Glish village.
Initial it.
But
just do the view.
Just sees. Is that enough?
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I'm fine. It's fine. You were the one who was tripping over it.
I ain't tripping, bitch.
Stop referring back to jokes that might not make it into the cut. You're not Richard Lee.
It's a bit
Stuart Lee.
Richard Lee.
This isn't your comedy vehicle.
It's a bit rich calling it the sun. That's all I'm saying.
Star.
Hold on, let's do it again. 3, 2, 1. It's a bit rich calling it the star, isn't it? Fucking hell. What were they thinking of? They were having a laugh, weren't they? So it's set in the Gaulish village that we all know. So, and essentially what we've got here is an Asterix book that's about the Battle of the Sexes. So Cacophonix the Bard finally gets people's backs up enough for him to have to leave the village.
Blimey.
Apparently he teaches the kids. So this figure of fun, this person they ridicule and they ostracise, they leave him in charge of their children all day.
That's a bit ridiculous.
Interesting. So although there's some lovely bits where Cacophonix gets his own back on fully automatics, the blacksmith, who always hits Cacophonix over the head with his hammer, saying, "You are not going to sing." And Cacophonix does it to him, which is funny because he's got a right ump on. But as soon as he leaves, all of a sudden, a mysterious stranger by the name of Bruava turns up, who is a female bard, and she is here to take Cacophonix's place. And slowly but surely, she ingratiates herself with the women of the village.
Oh.
Slowly but surely, the men of the village start getting the hump. She is, you see, a feminist.
No.
And she's
not a feminist.
I will tell you what a feminist she is towards the end, because she does the ultimate feminism.
Makes loads of female versions of films.
Don't guess, because you'll fucking spoil it. What am I going to do?
Sorry.
Say yes when I've already said I'll leave it till the end. Clearly,
there's
a big capper to the whole feminist thing.
I misunderstood.
I've got planned in my head, and oh no, well, we're shit all over that, sod him. So, Obelix goes to school for some reason. And,
because he's quite dim.
Yeah, to be fair, that's true. But then we cut back to Rome. We cut back to Rome. And Caesar's with one of his spies. And he's going, "How's that special secret weapon? How's that going?" And the bloke goes, "Yeah, it's going right, Caesar. Cheers, yeah. Don't you worry. Secret weapon, well on its way now."
What are you talking about?
Caesar. This Caesar having a chat with his spy. It's all quiet.
Yeah.
Secret weapon. You've got a secret weapon, haven't you, Mr. Spy Man?
Literally repeating what you were saying.
Yeah, that's the exact words. Mr. Spy Man, he says, "Yeah, I've got a secret weapon. Secret weapons. Secret weapons were on its way. It's good. It's doing. It's going. It's
right."
So we cut back to the village, and Bruava, she's giving the women lessons in the evening. She's telling her fellow women to throw off their chains and free themselves from the slavery of masculine tyranny, which is good. And the fellas start to get wise to this, and they're like, "Well, I ain't fucking hanging about here. These women are getting right uppity. I'm not hanging about with this." You know, it was all right when we had our own way, but now we're not getting our own way. I'm not living equally with them. I'm going to fuck off.
Yeah.
So they go and live with Cacophonix in the forest. And all the time, the secret weapon's heading their way. Inexorably.
What's the secret weapon? Is it women's lib?
Well, almost. So eventually Impedimenta takes over the village. She takes over the village so much that it fucks Asterix off. And Bruava makes a bit of a move for Asterix. She's going, "Look, you know, you're single, I'm single. We could get together.
We could mingle. You're single, I'm single. We could mingle.
We could make it." Now, Jane, you can see the page. So don't spoil this. Don't look at the page. How do you think Asterix reacts to that? knowing Asterix's character as we do, how do you think
it's
he reacts to that?
It's not an handicap thing, is it?
He punches her in the face.
That's not good.
He punches her right in the face.
That's not good.
It's the first time I've been reading an Asterix book, and you've got to remember, there's a little bit of racism in it, isn't it? First time I've ever read an Asterix book, I went, oh...
91, oh, I feel like that was too normal in 91 stories.
He's punched her right in the mush.
That's not good.
Yeah, well, but what happens before that?
Well, she propositions him and you know, says we should get married. So all I'm saying is, Asterix, confirmed bachelor.
Right before.
Possibly dealing with some suppressed stuff. What?
So
she kisses him.
So she picks him up and then kisses him.
Yeah.
So what Jane's getting at here, and I understand. Yeah. I think what Jane's getting at. Yeah. What you're saying is that she sexually assaults him.
Yeah.
Right.
She didn't pick him up by his dick.
James,
if someone picked you up and kissed you that you didn't want to pick you up and kiss you, what would she do?
Sexual assault.
I'd be all right with that.
Well, you would.
Yeah, and that's all that matters as far as the law's concerned. Isn't it? Fuck. Anyway, yeah, to be fair, he's provoked when he hits her.
I think they're probably both wrong.
Yeah,
she shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have done that. Yeah. It was a different time.
And needless to say, he's mortified. He is mortified.
That she asked him or that he hit her?
That he hit her. He's mortified.
Well,
that
I mean,
as long as
he regrets it.
Because what is quite a big deal, apparently, we learn to Gaulish men, is they won't hit women.
Right, well, that's good
that's
of them.
That's a big deal for Gaulish men, we find out.
To be fair, at this exact point in comics history, the most famous married English man in comics, Andy Capp, was pretty much hitting his wife at least once a week.
On the regular, yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess...
But then she was hitting him too, so, you know, by the logic that we just
followed... No, I don't think...
Yeah, she was. I mean, it's a...
She was, but, I mean, it's just... I mean, it's just ugly. It's all ugly, isn't it? It's complicated.
It is complicated. I don't know why you've opened up this can of worms.
So. I didn't. I feel kind of like we've been rooting for Asterix for all this time. I really wish you'd done this book first.
Set the tone.
Apparently, according to you two, he was justified. What are you backtracking on that now?
The way you described that he just punched her out of the blue was perhaps a little...
I was following a conceit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was pretty conceited.
Yeah, for review purposes only. So, yeah, eventually all the men get the hump and they decide to leave.
Yeah.
And then the secret weapon turns up. Now, you might have thought, as I did, that Bruava's the secret weapon.
I thought she was a secret weapon.
No, apparently not. She's not the secret weapon.
Is it the glass ceiling? Is the glass ceiling the secret weapon?
Well, the glass ceiling is smashed by the secret weapon because the secret weapon is a battalion of female legionaries. Because, you see... The Gaulish warriors...
Don't hit women unless provoked by a sexual assault.
But when they chip up at the the village, there's no men there.
Yeah, I see. These are master storytellers.
There's just the women. So how do the Gaulish women, led by the feminist Bruava, how do they combat this menace? How do you think the women of the Gaulish village who have the druid that makes the magic potion...
Punch up.
Perhaps some... You reckon there's a big punch up? No, Bruava organises a linen sale.
Huh.
A what sale?
A linen sale.
Sell linen?
There's a market. There's a market there.
And the trained...
And the legionaries get distracted by the fashions and the perfumes and the hairdressers. So... They decide to desert
I'm so conflicted.
This is a messed up book.
This is my least favourite Asterix book that I've read. It really is. I kind of get where he was going. It's got that early 90s thing of, like, you know, demonstrating women's liberation and stuff and being on board with it.
But then the minute a hairdresser and shoes are on show, everything changes.
It mishandles it so horribly, and I think it does things with Asterix's character that I'm really... uncomfortable with. The whole thing about him hitting, the reason I played up, the whole thing about him hitting the character, it feels kind of weirdly out of character, and it just feels disjointed the whole way through. There's some funny stuff in here, there's some really amusing wordplay, and there's some funny conceits, but the story as a whole left me feeling uncomfortable in a way that no other Asterix book, even with the racism, makes me do. So it's the first Asterix book that I've reviewed. No, I say review. That I can't really recommend. It's a really weird one. If you're a completist, you'll want it. And there is some nice stuff in there, but it just left me feeling weird while I was reading it, and I didn't really like it very much. I'm sorry, listener.
That's
I'm
okay.
Sorry we're normally, like we're like normally very positive, and I love Asterix. Don't get me wrong, I love Asterix very much.
And I think the Sword and the Rose was a giveaway.
I read it away. It is an awful cover, but we are into the notorious tricky section now, towards the end of Albert Uderzo's career on Asterix.
Is the Rose a photograph? I can't tell from here.
No, it's a drawing.
It's all a bit odd.
It's a rose entwined around a Gaulish sword.
Okay.
And she's on the cover lifting him up, and he looks all embarrassed. But I tell you, they should have had him punching her on the front cover. She knew what was coming.
Yeah, maybe.
Or at least it should say warning. This is weird.
This is a weird one.
Yeah. I mean, I feel a bit odd as well, what with the giddiness earlier on and the sort of regret I'm feeling for being so giddy and some of the silly things I've said during the podcast. So, I mean, that might be affecting how I'm reviewing the book as well. I don't know. I've got no control over my mind.
I mean, you do have a bit, though.
No, not really.
To be fair.
No.
Don't you? No. None at all. No. It's not me, it's just my mind.
I'm not taking any fucking responsibility for what comes out of my mouth, because then I'd have to start, you know,
being seriously reflective.
Yeah, and I had a go at that once, and it didn't go very well at all.
Thank you for talking about the book that you didn't like, James.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It sounds really
I'm
depressive.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, you've taken on a task.
Yeah.
And there are going to be ups and downs.
Yeah.
That is the nature of documentary.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're making serious podcast here.
We're on serious now.
No, you have decided you've got a responsibility. You've taken that responsibility. Yeah. You're going to chronicle all of the Asterix books, and there are going to be missteps.
We're going to what I understand to be the bitter end here. I tell you, I'm sorry. It's Asterix and Obelix All at Sea next.
How many more are there?
Three after that.
That's all right. Four. We can do that standing on our head.
Yeah. We can get this done. We can get this done. If we get our heads down and power on, we can get this done.
Yeah. We're going for it.
I'll be done by the end of the year. It's fine.
Yeah, and then you can die.
Yeah. Oh, don't. See, I hate it when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, don't be near water.
I've stopped swimming because, yeah, you don't wash.
You didn't start swimming until after I made my prediction.
Oh, that's a point, though.
Interesting fate.
Yeah.
That's an old prediction. Maybe the listener doesn't. The listener of this show might not realise
that
James is going to die and it's going to be something to do with water.
Yeah, oh, fucking hell. If you had any idea how much this shit keeps me up at night in the real world, you wouldn't say it.
It doesn't.
It fucking does.
It doesn't, and you know how I know?
How?
Because you take medication that knocks you right out after about 7 or 8 o'clock.
All right, so I have a little bit of worry just before I fall asleep. But, you know, so a few minutes of worry.
Yeah, you don't come at an actual insomniac and stuff.
I tell you, you don't want to be taking that medication while you're watching Cosmos. Man, it'll blow your fucking brains out.
I think that's us. I think that's the show.
Yeah, I'm going to go home and have some quiet contemplation and start writing letters of apology to the listeners of the show. I'll write you all individually, so let us know who you are.
Do a mail merge. you don't have to write to each individual person.
Yeah, mail merges always go really well, don't they?
Just write it generically and we'll put each one of their names in.
I'm not going to betray your security or your confidence in this listener. I'd like to write to every one of you personally.
So anyway, if you want to support this, you can go... Did it again. Laughed right into the mic.
Did not laugh.
Sorry.
Patreon.com/TOTP is where you can give us a little bit of money every month to make yourself complicit in
my downfall.
In just this whole thing. Thank you to our contributors. They're awesome. Always, always awesome. Thank you, Jane.
Thanks, Nick.
I like the sound of the John Hickman book. I'd forgotten that came out this week. I was quite looking forward to Tom Mortum Coker. So now I know to go look for it.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, James, for reviewing a book that you didn't enjoy and bringing us down with all those sexual politics complications.
And well done for existing.
Don't you think, though, calling it the Star was a bit cheeky. Because it's the same fucking thing, isn't it?
And thank you to me for, I don't know, whatever.
Bye!
Tune in next week for episode 91. Bye-bye!
Bye!
91? Blimey, that's a lot.